Good afternoon. It's just about 3 o'clock. You are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on Tuesday, the 16th of September, the year 2014. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juneau afternoon. Today we'll talk with Maria Yucatel and Lisa Corcoran from the Bartlett Foundation about the upcoming February 20th fundraiser. Talk with Sarah Lewis about upcoming cooperative extension workshops. We'll get the details about Perseverance Theater's current production of The Iliad. And Terry Calvin from the Career and College Center will be here to talk about junior and senior information and financial aid nights at the schools. At Red Almanac for a note music and more today on a Juneau afternoon. With the forecast for tonight, mostly cloudy skies with areas of fog later on, low temperatures around 48 degrees. Wednesday, mostly cloudy skies with areas of fog in the morning, high temperatures around 58 degrees with light winds.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. An announcement was made recently that Canadian researchers found one of two lost ships from the Franklin Expedition. Explorer John Franklin and his men became lost during an expedition in the 1800s. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, some Native people in the far north say the Franklin Expedition should not be glorified.
The Conservative government of Prime Minister Stephen Harper was so invested in finding the lost ships of the Franklin Expedition that when news came out, it was the Prime Minister himself who made the announcement. He called it a historic day for Canada. The wreck was found about 35 feet below the surface in Arctic waters near King William Island, in the spot that Native legend said it was last seen. Researchers say they're not sure whether it's HMS Terror or HMS Erebus. The two ships and the 128 members of the crews disappeared during an 1845 quest for the Northwest Passage. The theory is that the ships became trapped in the ice and were abandoned. Inuit lore also tells of white men who were starving as late as the winter of 1850. While Franklin has been celebrated as a hero, some of the region's indigenous people see the time he spent in the far north as a darker period of their history. Morris Nielli says accounts of abductions of local women convinced Dene elders to rename the place once called Fort Franklin.
When I heard the story about Franklin, the way he treated the people here, through that elder, I had told the community that, why do we have a name after somebody that had done this to our community, our people? So that was one of the reasons why we had to change it back to Delaney.
Fort Franklin was renamed Delaney in 1993. Other traces of the lost expedition have been found over the years, as well as artifacts. The bodies of three crewmen were discovered in the 1980s. The Canadian government announced in 2008 that it would look for the ships and has since poured millions of dollars into the venture, with the Prime Minister himself taking part in the hunt. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
The number of returning fall Chinook salmon on the Columbia River has taken a dramatic upswing, Steve Jackson reports.
During the first full weekend of September, 107,000 Chinook salmon climbed the fish ladder at Bonneville Dam. A spokeswoman with the Columbia Intertribal Fish Commission, Sarah Thompson, says those numbers set a new record.
Those are the highest returns of fall Chinook over Bonneville Dam since its construction.
Thompson says the record numbers of returning fish is excellent news for the Columbia River tribes and their fisheries, and she attributes the improvement in the runs to a number of factors.
Improved fish passage, good ocean conditions, things like the Vernita Bar Agreement, and it actually was designed to increase water flows through the Hanford Reach area to protect the reds. We have the Hanford Reach Hatchery. We have great work by folks like the Nez Perce Tribe and Snake River Fall Chinook.
Thompson says the numbers of wild versus hatchery fish have not been determined yet, but the number of wild fish expected to make it all the way to the Snake River is expected to exceed the hatchery numbers this year. For National Native News, I'm Steve Jackson reporting from Spokane.
The National Congress of American Indians and tribal leaders are gathering in Washington, D.C. for two impact days. A briefing is taking place today with members of Congress and the Obama administration. Following the briefing, leaders are being encouraged to meet with their congressional delegations. They're looking at issues like voting rights, self-governance, and budgets. The Garden City Group and attorneys announced Monday that the first checks were mailed in the Cobell Indian Trust settlement. The group is administering the payments of nearly $950 million to plaintiffs. Checks may take 5 to 7 days to reach class members by mail. The historic Cobell lawsuit was filed in the 1990s against the federal government for the mismanagement of individual Indian trust accounts. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. The Convention and Tourism Department of the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce provides convention and event planning services for Native American organizations. Information at ahcnm.org. And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
National Native News brings you information from around Indian country and the world. Find out how to reach our listeners while also supporting this program by visiting nativenews.net.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:06 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. In studio with us is our first guest, Maria Yucatel and Lisa Corcoran from the Bartlett Foundation, here to talk about Sipu Gala coming up this Saturday, the 27th at Centennial Hall. Maria and Lisa, thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's great to be here. Thanks for the opportunity to tell everyone in Juneau about this fabulous seafood gala that we're having on the 27th. It's going to be wonderful seafood that is going to be provided by Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute and prepared by the Westmark Baranoff. They're part of our sponsors for this event.
So when you say seafood, what does that mean?
It means Alaskan bounty from the sea. will be donated for this event.
Yep.
Well, the good food they always have it there on the top of the tram. First, tell me about the Bartlett Foundation, if you could, please.
Bartlett Foundation is a 501c3 organization that's been established in 1994. And what we do is we basically fundraise for the hospital. You know, it's a city-owned hospital, and a lot of times the funding process doesn't acquire everything that's needed, and we help supplement with that by fundraising. This year, last year, the funding went to sponsor SANE training for nurses at Bartlett, and this year our main focus is going to be on the critical care unit and CCU. The bed systems that they have at the unit are decades old, and we're trying to replace a lot of the systems. So we'll have a fund-a-need component during the live auction to raise funds to buy new bed, at least one. And these beds help with mobility, and it's one of the best practices in patient recovery is mobility right away. And they do that at the hospital. However, the current beds don't make it very helpful. So these are these new systems will help increase the ability of mobility for patients right away.
Sounds fun. Tell me about the entertainment going on.
We'll have the
Thunder Mountain Big Band will be out. They'll be playing for about 3 hours. The event will start at 6:30. We'll start out with a cocktail hour, and then we'll move into auction and dinner. And then we'll have 3 hours of wonderful band music that we can dance and be entertained by.
There's also a gaming component. Our mm-hmm. theme is the Roaring Twenties. So we are we have horse races that will be provided for entertainment and viewing during the event. And then we're also working on some casino-type games.
Tell me more about the horse races, please.
Well, so horse racing was big in the 20s, so what we've done is we've partnered with a company that is called Night at the Races, and we'll have those, we'll have races shown on the big screens at Centennial Hall, and individuals get to participate as if you were at a horse race.
So you will make a donation, we'll run the races, we don't know what the outcome will be, we haven't seen those races, so everybody will get to be excited to see who gets to win, and then after the race is done, you get bragging rights and you might get a little prize.
So all that's happening is this Saturday, September 27th at Centennial Hall. Tell me about some of the items that are going to be on the auction block, please.
Well, we have tickets from Alaska Airlines. We have a fabulous 7-night cruise for the Caribbean donated by Royal Caribbean Cruise Lines. We have other adventure packages donated by a local community, including the White Pass Railroad. We also have zip line adventures. We have
multiple local businesses are donating, so there's going to be just a variety of different things at different dollar amounts. So it'll be an event that anyone can come. Well, not anyone. It's over 21 event because there'll be cocktails involved, but there'll be a dollar amount for anybody that could bid. So that will be kind of exciting. So, anything from probably $20 on up to several thousand, depending on what kind of a trip you want to bid for.
And also the fund the need component, that is if you really have everything in the world that you need and you just want to help, you'll have that opportunity to fund the need, because in that portion of the live auction, then you are funding the bed, which is the need that we're fundraising for this year.
Mm-hmm. How can people get tickets?
Tickets are available online at www.brhfoundation.org and through the JAC. They're also available at the Blue Heron gift shop at the hospital and from any board member.
You can, if you know a board member, there's about, 12 of us? A board member will have tickets as well.
And events like this wouldn't be possible without the aid of sponsors. And you have a few sponsors you want to thank, please?
We do. I have a list of sponsors. I have AFSCME, the Westmark, Airlift Northwest, Gordian Flights, Alaskan Airlines, Alaskan Brewery, Rainforest Pediatrics, K&L Distributors, Southeast Radiation Oncology, Midnight Sun Oncology, Hecla Greens Creek, Princess Cruises, Royal Caribbean, Alaska Cash Liquor. Thank you very much for your support
for
of this
your
great
support.
Event.
Yep.
And you have an auctioneer who is a professional, Scott Robertson.
Yes, he's coming to us from the Tampa, Florida region, and he is very dedicated to only helping out non-for-profits. So we're very excited that he's coming and helping us. He's emceeing the event, and he is also helping us with the auction, including the fund a need. He's an expert in that kind of auction.
Now, people can't make it to the soiree itself. Is there an address people could send a donation to for the Bartlett Foundation?
Of course. So we'll take donations online, brhfoundation.org. Or you can call us at 463-5704. We're happy to take donations anytime.
I'm talking with Mary Yucatel and Lisa Corcoran about the upcoming Seafood Gala. It's Saturday, September 27th at Centennial Hall. Tell me how to get tickets again, please.
www.brhfoundation.org at the JAC and at the gift shop at the hospital and through board members.
Anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
It's going to be a great evening. We hope to see you there. And it's all in support of Bartlett Regional Hospital. Thank you.
I forget about the weather, 'cause I think it's simply grand. Whenever we're together, holding my honey's hand, we go strolling by the hour. It can rain to beat the band, but it's just an April shower when I'm holding my honey's hand. Oh gosh, oh geez, we walk and we walk. Oh gee, oh gosh, we don't have to talk. There's a certain satisfaction that we both can understand, and that's the main attraction when I'm holding my honey's hand. Yeah. Oh gosh, we don't have to talk now.
There's a certain satisfaction that we both can understand. It's just the main attraction. Holding my honey's hand, holding my honey's hand, holding my honey's hand.
Jeff Healy. Time is 3:15, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Next guests are Lucy Peckham and Boston Christopher from Perseverance Theater here to talk about the production of The Iliad. Thank you very much for coming down the station.
Thank you, Jeff. And it's actually an Iliad, which is a very interesting thing about the show, that it's not a version. The writers actually decided to call it an Iliad because they consider this a version of the show, not necessarily The Iliad.
And that's A-N, not U-N, like Uncola.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, A-N, yeah.
So how do you take a poem like the Iliad and turn it into an Iliad, a dramatic presentation?
Well, that's a great question. It's, you know, the Iliad by Homer has about 16,000 lines of verse, if you round up. And this is based on the Robert Fagles translation, which is a very famous translation of that particular book. And but what they've done is the writers have gone back to the core, which was that it was these were oral presentations, O-R-A-L. And actually, you could also call them A-U-R-A-L. Sure.
Well, it's just a spelling show for today.
but, they, you know, back then it was somebody who would be one person who would sing this song. They would sing it, and they would sing these words. And so the writers have gone back to basically a story about storytelling. It's really become something that is, what is the art form of storytelling, and how can we put that into a modern context using the Iliad as sort of an inspiration? As
a launch point, at least.
Yeah.
Now, does the play and Iliad reflect the eclectic hexameter moments of the play?
There is a mix of hexameter, however you want to say it, and we want to spell it. No, I don't think we want to spell it. And also modern contemporary language. So it really sort of allows for an accessible way into the story. So it's sort of, it basically is, the setup is this poet shows up in an empty theater or a basically a blank slate of a theater, and he has been commanded basically by the gods to tell this story throughout time and until something changes. One of the first lines of the play is, every time I sing this song, I hope it's the last time. So it's one of those things where he's been a witness, or not a participant, but he's been a witness to wars throughout time, and those come up throughout the play, as well as continuing to get back to basically the story. What they've focused on is the story of Hector and Achilles and their sort of rivalry and their sort of big battle and how we get to that. And that's sort of the basic setup of the story. So the poet has a lot of his own points of view about the things that he's saying. And so as he's telling you this story, he's also bringing you into a modern context, talking about things like standing in a grocery store line and getting mad because the other line's moving faster and how that makes you rage inside, but you're not going to move to the other line because you've been in this line already for 20 minutes. So, and what that does to you as a person.
Your first material talks about an unshakable attraction to violence, destruction, and chaos. I'm assuming it's not a comedy.
Not in general, but there are moments of levity. There's definitely, I mean, the poet himself is a character, and he has a lot of interesting viewpoints. And just like the moment I just talked about with the grocery store, that's a funny one. And Lucy might be able to tell you a couple of the others.
Oh, definitely. I enter shortly after Boston has a good time as the poet. Comparing bottles of liquor to gods, or describing them as residing in the bottles of liquor, it's one of the more entertaining moments of the show.
Yeah, so it's not necessarily
there.
Yeah, it's not a comedy, but it definitely has moments of levity, and it does explore that sort of attraction that we have, and he kind of makes fun of it here and there, but he also takes it very seriously.
Does the audience get it? Do they laugh, or do they kind of afraid to laugh because they think it's such a serious play?
I think they laugh a lot.
Yeah.
What was really great was we did a student matinee last week, and that audience, those teenagers, they got it probably more than any of the adult audiences so far. They found a lot of humorous moments in the play, and that were the right ones. You know, they weren't just laughing at me; they were laughing with me. And so I was really, I've been really happy with the response of the crowd so far in terms of being along, because you're basically telling them a story for an hour and 40 minutes, and so I think in that the way they've constructed it, you have to have those moments of levity so that they can, you know, get that expression out of a little bit of air, because they might have been pent up because of the other things going on.
And it's just you on stage.
It's me, but it's not just me, because we also have what we call the muse or the musician, which is played by Lucy Peckham. And she also created much of the music in the show through rehearsal. And it's a fantastic element that really brings the show alive even further, because you're being underscored, or you're being complimented by, or you're actually in partnership with the music, and it becomes this amazing collaboration.
Oh, shucks. but I absolutely agree. And it for me, it ties in so much with the storytelling tradition. If you want to talk about people who were troubadours or minstrels, stories were often accompanied by music, and that is my role in this. I actually don't say a word, but throughout the show, I support the poet. I accompany him. I cajole him. I redirect him. I awaken him.
She's my muse.
Yeah, to possibilities, to where the story goes next. And it's been an amazing experience for me, both in the process of working with Boston. I really couldn't start to work on the show until I could hear the sound of the poet's voice speaking the lines and telling the story. And then the places that needed that musical accompaniment started to come to life for me and to come to music for me. So some of the music, maybe about half of it, I composed, and the other half is adapted and arranged by me from some really amazing obscure composers and one pretty well-known one, but I actually didn't end up using any of his stuff in the show. But the two obscure composers are Lockram Johnson, who is a miraculous mid-20th century composer from the Pacific Northwest, Seattle, Washington. And the other is a Hungarian composer named Paul Jardányi, who was of the same era as Aaron Copland in the United States, who took folk music from that region of Eastern Europe and developed it into themes. And I'm very tied to the history of music and war through my exploration of themes for this show. And for me, what resonates really strongly is a story that made it onto public radio of the cellist of Sarajevo during the Bosnia-Herzegovina conflict. A cellist went out into the middle of a square where that people had been killed. Snipers were shooting, and people had been killed while standing in a bread line. 22 people shot in that square, and this cellist went out, Vedran Smelovic, went out and played in the middle of the square in full line of sniper fire for 22 days straight in honor of those people. And the miracle is he wasn't shot. And it was picked up around the world. So the music that is inspired by and triggered by and follows conflict was a great inspiration for me for working on this show with Boston, but also some lighter things as well.
You're way smarter than me, Lucy.
Not true.
All that you just said. You're so great. So wonderful.
We make a good team.
Is there any call and response type of music?
In the show?
Yeah, where you play a note and he would...
Not directly, but there are times where, like she said, she will play something. I might get lost in a moment, and then she'll play something that brings me back to the present, and there's things like that, but there's no necessarily like
I don't even know if you know it, but the themes that trigger those thoughts are themes that are actually supposed to remind you of that person yeah, that the Pope speaks of.
Yeah,
that's what I thought.
Yeah.
So there are themes that are actual.
I'm not that dumb.
Like, so what?
Let's see, what instruments do you play and play?
Just one. I just play my cello. That's one of the ideas that came from Boston and our director, Art Roach, that I initially was really scared of. I'm used to having a whole wealth of instruments and recorded sound at my command.
It's just such a beautiful instrument, and I knew she could play it. And and I was like, I knew it would sound good, and it was just something that I thought, well, if we can find a way to make the sound effects only come from this instrument, if we do need sound effects, then how amazingly creative could we be with that? Like, by limiting yourself, you actually find a way to be even more creative.
So there are just two voices in the whole show, and that's Boston's, the poets, and the cello, which is really amazing, really enthralling for me.
What age range is this for?
I would say that, you know, I had somebody in the crowd the other day who had brought her daughter, and she was maybe, I think I asked her because I saw them the next day. She was 9, and the daughter really enjoyed it. There are a few, only a couple swear words, but it's also in terms of, there's a lot of description of violence. There's no actual violence, but there is description of, you know, arms getting wrenched out from sockets and things like that. So I would really leave it to somebody's discretion. So I would say, you know, it's definitely, if you were to rate it by a movie rating, it would be PG, but maybe even up to PG-13.
Yeah, I would agree.
I'm not sure if I asked this already, and I'm having so much fun in the interview, but do you recommend that the audience bone up on their history?
Yeah. Well, you don't actually need to know anything about the Iliad. Mm-hmm. If you remember reading it in high school or college or being assigned a paper and you had to try to slog through 24 books of the Iliad.
Or you read the Cliff Notes.
Or you cheated and read the Cliff Notes, yeah. You don't actually need to know that in terms of to be able to come and enjoy the play. I mean, we do have a really funky lobby this time around with some of our research that we had through rehearsal that's just sort of plastered up all over the inside of the lobby. And basically it's a story about two men who are in conflict with each other and how they...
Achilles and Hector,
and yeah. You don't really have to know much, but it might give you a great reintroduction to the story and might make you want to go read the book again.
It definitely did that for me, which is astonishing. I did have to read it in high school, and it was a tough slog.
Well, they did a great job of in this play of distilling down the thing that people probably remember about the book is there's passages, like whole books really, of just names and more names. And they've done a great job of distilling that down so that it's there in essence, but it's not there in actuality.
We're talking with Boston Christopher and Lucy Peckham about the Un-Iliad play at the Brisbane Theatre. It opened last week on the 5th, I believe.
We've run 2 weekends now. We have two weekends left. We go through the 28th of September. It will also be going up to Anchorage, so if you come see it or you've seen it and you have friends in Anchorage, let them know that it'll be there at the end of October. But we run here through the September 28th, and all of our Sunday performances have changed to 4 p.m., so that's something for people to know. But tickets are available at all the regular outlets, and you can find out more information by going to ptalaska.org or giving us a call at 463-TIXS, or that's 8497 are the numbers for that, the digits.
I feel educated already.
Good.
Also, Christopher and Lucy Peckham, thank you very much for coming down. Anything you'd like to add, I might have forgotten to ask.
No, thank you, Jeff. This has been a pleasure.
Jeff, you're a delight.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 16th of September, 2014. It was on this day in 1853, Henry Steinway, who'd come from Hamburg in 1849, sold his first American-made piano with a cast-iron frame, which allowed a piano to be strung with greater tension on the strings and with the bass strings crossing above the treble strings so they could be longer and make a grander sound. It's the birthday of James J. Hill, born in southern Ontario, 1838, who built the Great Northern Railroad from St. Paul all the way to Seattle. It's the birthday of the creator of Curious George, H.A. Ray, born Hans Augusto Reyersbach in Hamburg, Germany, 1898. Spent a lot of time at the zoo as a kid drawing animals, and in 1939, he and his wife, Margaret, both of them German Jews, were living in Paris when World War II broke out. They were working on a new book starring a mischievous monkey. H.A. Rey wrote to a friend, "It seems ridiculous to be thinking about children's books, but life goes on. The editors edit, the artists draw, even during wartime." By June 1940, it was clear that Paris was in danger from the Nazis, so Hans built two bicycles out of spare parts, and he and his wife bicycled with whatever they could carry, including the collection of monkey sketches for the book. They left Paris 2 days before the Nazis invaded, and they rode 75 miles in 3 days. They fled on a four-month journey that took them to Lisbon, then Rio, and finally New York City, where Curious George was published in 1941. It's the birthday of the department store founder J.C. Penney, born Hamilton, Missouri, 1875, who introduced profit-sharing and who referred to his employees as associates. It was on this date, 1672, Anne Bradstreet died. Was born in England, probably sometime in 1612, came to this country when she was 18 with her husband, Simon Bradstreet, settled in Andover, Massachusetts, raised 8 children, and somehow she found time, Anne Bradstreet did, to write poetry, wrote about her devotion to her husband, her children, wrote religious poems, and also poems about her daily life, about her fear of childbirth, and the loss of her home to fire, and the death of her granddaughter. Here's a poem for today by Olivia Stifler entitled Grandchildren. They disappear with friends near age 11. We lose them to baseball and tennis, garage band, slumber parties, stages where they rehearse for the future, ripen in a tangle of love knots. With our artificial knees and hips, we move into the back seats of their lives, obscure as dust behind our wrinkles, and sigh as we add the loss of them to our growing list of the missing. Sometimes they come back, carting memories of sugar cookies and sandy beaches, memories of how we sided with them in their wars with parents, sided with them even as they slid out of our laps into the arms of others. Sometimes they come back and hold onto our hands as if they were the thin strings of helium balloons about to drift off. Grandchildren, a poem by Olivia Stifler from Otherwise We Are Safe, published by Dos Madres Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Quercus, publisher of The Lewis Man by Scottish crime novelist Peter May. When a body is found buried in a bog, deep family secrets surface. The Lewis Man, now in bookstores everywhere. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
I'm S334, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. I'm Jeff Brown, I'm your host for today. In the studio we have with us Sarah Lewis and Kristen Mattag. We're going to talk about a couple of workshops going on. One is going on tonight on starting and operating a specialty food business in Alaska. Another workshop, which we'll be talking about in a minute, talks about small business development and starting a small business in Alaska. Sarah and Kristen, thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
Thanks so much for having us, Jeff.
First of all, Kristen, tell me about the small business development.
The small business development?
So Kristen is with JEDC, and I'm with Cooperative Extension. And we are actually partnering because one of the things that Cooperative Extension does is we have a number of small business development type classes, whether they be food-based businesses or just whatever type of business you might be interested in. We have some folks up in Fairbanks who are specialists in the area, and so they're going to be doing these video conferences, basically video classes. And so I've partnered with JEDC, with Kristen, so that we can offer them in their conference room.
Got it. And the workshop which starts tonight is called Starting and Operating a Specialty Food Business in Alaska.
That's right. And these ones are actually not going to be at JDC. These ones are going to be out at UAF. And so the ones tonight, Starting and Operating a Specialty Food Business in Alaska, it is a five-class series, and you sign up for the whole series. And it starts tonight at from 5:30 to 8 out at UAS. It's in room 115 in the Egan building. And what the course is going to do is it actually goes through the whole process. If we have a number of small food entrepreneurs in Juneau and throughout Southeast, actually. And so what these courses do is they help you really determine whether to do your business, help you get ideas of what kinds of food you might like to do or how to formulate your recipes, how to market them, how to price them, and then some of the small business development stuff that's specific to a food business. And so those are going to be Tuesdays and Thursdays for the next, 2.5 weeks. So what I suggest people do is they come to, they just Google Juneau Extension, and they'll get to our website, and right on the front page there, or they can go to our Facebook page, and right there they'll be able to find the flyer and how to register. And the one tonight, you can just come to it. You can actually register at the class if you wish to, if you haven't pre-registered. And so once again, it's in room 115 in the Egan building out at UAS.
And there's a cost?
The cost is $50 for all five classes. So it's a great value, actually.
What are some common specialty foods?
Well, you know, the ones I always really like to give the examples of is Wild Oven, the bread that is done here in town. Mm-hmm. That's a specialty food. Basically what is when you're using less used ingredients, a lot of times people try to use local ingredients, or basically it's locally made foods, not necessarily in large quantities. Another good example is Chef Steph, who does all of the great shortbread and candies and things like that. Those are specialty food businesses, and you might not necessarily be heading towards having your own storefront or anything like that. You might be looking at just doing a couple of farmers markets if you wanted to, if you were just doing jams and jellies is something you were interested in. And this class gives information on all the different levels of permitting and things that you need to do for all those types of classes.
What are some typical issues that people may not be aware of?
Oh, well, there are regulations about if you are someone who is harvesting food from the wild, like berries that you're planning to sell instead of using for personal use. There are actually regulations, and you do need to get permits for that kind of thing. So learning about that, if you really do want to make a business out of, saying, just using the example of making jams and jellies, you do need to know that there are some other permits that you need to get other than just sort of the food service or food manufacturing type of permits.
Small business, especially foods, is the number growing in Alaska, would you say?
Do you have any facts about that, Kristen?
I actually would be interested to find that out. That's a great question, Jeff.
It feels like it is. We get a lot of questions about it at the Cooperative Extension. I get a number of people calling saying, I have, you know, a jam or a jelly that I would like to market. How do I go about doing that? We get a lot of questions about it in smaller communities because they're really trying to diversify their, you know, income, either family-wise or community-wise. And so I do a number of classes in communities throughout Southeast about cottage foods, the cottage foods industry, and how to start that up. So there's a lot of interest in it for sure.
I have a question. Would you learn how to do like a market survey to find out if your food item would be a necessary food item or
yes.
And one that somebody might want to purchase?
Yes. That is something that they talk about in the classes, is how to do that, both in terms of how to figure out how big a serving you should do, mm-hmm. and then how to determine whether you should tweak it to make mm-hmm. it make more money, to make people like it better, things like that. So there is some of that.
Mm-hmm. Who's tonight's class for? Is it for somebody who's thinking about starting up one, or who's already started up one?
I'm sorry, repeat that?
Who's your audience tonight?
Oh, the audience tonight is people who are wanting to start a business. Some people, the last time that we offered it, there were some folks who had actually already started a business and they wanted to get some more ideas, and it was actually helpful for them as well. It's probably the whole series is probably most helpful for someone who is very near the beginning of the process.
You want to talk to me a little bit more about the small business section?
You bet. And this is the one that I'm really excited to be working with Kristen at JEDC on, because we have six classes coming up starting October 9th. These are all separate classes, though. It's not a series. You would sign up for each one. And we have everything from, I'll just list them, starting a small business, e-commerce and web-based tools for your business, writing a business plan, legal forms of business, record keeping and taxes for mining, and how to get a small business loan. Those are the six separate classes, and we're going to be offering those at the conference room at JEDC.
Right downtown. Right across from Foodland.
Is there a cost for those?
Each one is $25, so each class is $25. You don't sign up for the whole thing.
Small price to pay for such a great information.
It is, actually. It really is.
I think it'd be a lot of practical information. The Juneau Economic Development Council is happy to collaborate with UAF Extension, because our mission is to create more economic opportunities. And this is a great example of how we can do that with the workshop series.
Tell me more about how to register tonight for tonight and then for the upcoming small business ones.
Great. For tonight, you can just show up at 115 Egan Building out at UAS, or you can go, if you want to, you can go ahead and give a call to our office before 5 p.m. That's 523-3280, and go to extension 0 and talk with Susie. You can get more information about the class that starts tonight. The small business workshops that are going to be starting in October, the best thing is going to be to go to our Facebook page or JEDC's Facebook page or either of our web pages. We're going to have all the information there, and there are links to where you can register.
Kristen McTagg and Sarah Lewis, thank you for coming by the station. Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
I don't think so. I think we're pretty good.
Thank you so much.
There are spices and vegetables that you can grow. Some are under the ground, some grow tall. Though they all have their qualities, this you must know, that the garlic is best of them all. Egyptians, Phoenicians, the Vikings, the Greeks, Babylonians, Danes, and Chinese, on their voyages took enough garlic for weeks, and their enemies died on the breeze. Since biblical times, in all parts of the earth, it has cured countless sufferings and ills. Oh, if we understood what the garlic is worth, we would throw out our poisonous pills. In Bulgaria's mountains and Russia's white plains, people live to 100 years old. For it's juice of the garlic that runs in their veins. Oh, it's worth twice its weight in pure gold. With selenium, germanium, allicin too, it can fight off all types of disease. So if you've got arthritis, TB, or the flu, just say, peel me a garlic clove, please. Plant some cloves in your garden to keep away worms and the other bad things that kill plants. If you're one of those people concerned about germs, you can drop one or two in your pants. There are spices and vegetables that you can grow. Some are under the ground, some grow tall. Though they all have their qualities, this you must know, that the garlic is best of them all. Oh, the garlic is best of them all. Yes, the garlic is best of them all.
Hi, this is Rob Cohen, and I'm excited to be kicking off 360 North's concert series Alaska Originals with the Rob Cohen Jazz Group. Join me, Doug Bridges on sax, Alexi Painter on bass, and Clay Good on drums for a show we're calling Contrafaction. Music, conversation, and more at 360 in the KTOO building. Thursday, September 25th. Doors open at 6:30 and cameras roll at 7 sharp. Tickets at krnn.org.
Hello, this is Garrison Keillor. The 40th season of A Prairie Home Companion opens September 20th, and KTOO is hosting a listening party where you can join other Prairie Home fans for some streaming video of the show and have a chance to win a trip to see the show in person. It all happens on Saturday, September 20th, so put it on your calendar.
Tickets and information about the event and the accompanying meatloaf supper at ktoo.org.
Time is 3:45 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. I'm Jeff Brown, I'm your host for today. In the studio with us now, Terry Calvin from the Career and College Center at Thunder Mountain High School and Juneau Douglas High School, talking about junior and senior information nights, financial aid nights at the schools. Terry, thank you for coming in today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me today.
First of all, tell me what you do at the Career and College Center.
Oh, that's a good question. I am actually the career advisor at both Thunder Mountain High School and Juneau Douglas High School. I work a couple of days a week at each school, and I am there to help assist kids in their post-high school planning, whether it be college-bound, apprenticeships, looking at going to a trade school, or just getting a job. So kind of helping them get to that stage of what do I do after high school.
It's kind of an off-kilter question, but what percentage of the population knows exactly what they want to do in high school, and by the time they're 30 years old, they're doing something completely different?
Oh, I couldn't even begin to tell you. We have students who worry when they're entering college that they don't know what they're going to study, and by the time they contact me when they're done, they've changed their majors a couple of times. So I would say that we usually change our professions multiple times before we actually settle down.
Tell me more about the junior and senior information nights, please.
Okay, so tonight starts out junior and senior night. Tonight is senior night at Juneau Douglas High School. It's at 5 o'clock in the Commons. And that's not to say that Thunder Mountain parents and students can't attend that one, if that's the one that works for them. And what we'll be actually doing at our senior night is just kind of going over a timeline for what students should be doing their senior year to get ready for graduation in May. Basic things like their SATs, getting letters of recommendations, how to go about looking for colleges, just working on timelines. So JDHS is tonight at 5 o'clock in the Commons. Thunder Mountain will be hosting theirs on Thursday, the 18th of September, at 5:30 in their auditorium. Again, it's not to say that if you can't make the one at JD, you can go to Thunder Mountain. The information will be for both schools. And then we will turn around and start talking with our juniors, because junior year is never too early to start planning and looking into colleges, getting your SATs done, doing some college visits. So we'll also be doing a junior night at both high schools. Both high schools will be sponsoring their junior night on the same night, which is September 23rd. Juneau Douglas will be in the library at 5 o'clock, and out at Thunder Mountain High School, it will be at 5:30 in their auditorium.
What's the most common mistake people make when they neglect something in their planning?
The most common is waiting too long. Sometimes we get busy in our senior year and start thinking about everything that's happening in our world, and they think they can wait until after Christmas to start making their applications and doing their research. And that's probably the biggest mistake, when the kids start coming to me in December and saying, oh, Mrs. Calvin, I haven't taken my SATs yet, or I don't have any ideas. So procrastination at just kind of getting started, and then they kind of fall into that panic mode, because we like to encourage kids to be done with that process by Christmas break, so then they can change their focus to scholarships in the spring. So they're not worrying about where they're going to apply for schools, but how they're going to pay for schools. And that leads me to my next evening we have. We are actually also sponsoring a financial aid night. I don't claim to know much about the financial aid. I can help students along the way. But I actually have Barbara Monger from Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Ed coming down from Anchorage to do a presentation to our junior and senior parents on helping them understand ways to pay for college. And we do encourage junior parents to come. And that is scheduled at Thunder Mountain High School in their auditorium again on September 30th. So 2 weeks from today will be the financial aid night. And there'll be just one night, and that will be for all students in the area, as well as the ACU students. If they want to come and join us, they're more than welcome. So the financial aid night will be September 30th out at Thunder Mountain at 5:30 p.m.
And you cover occupations that don't need a high school education, but need a vocational technical school.
So technical schools, they still do need a high school education. They do require either a GED or a diploma to get into those. But yes, we actually, those schools you will end up having to pay for as well. And so the financial aid and having that conversation with students still comes up with the idea of they want to go to culinary arts school or they want to go into carpentry, into other programs. We are there to help support them for that, yes, as well.
Talking with Terry Calvin from the Career and College Center. Also talk about open forum, please.
Okay, so the open forum is if you don't have a senior or a junior and don't join us for senior night at Thunder Mountain on Thursday night, the superintendent will be at Thunder Mountain in the library and talk about the open. We'll have an open forum about the Juneau School District, and it'll be in the library at Thunder Mountain High School. The other thing to kind of put out there is that this year for the graduating class of 2015, their credits for graduation have increased. So the number of credits they need to graduate has increased. And we just want to assure all parents and students that the teachers and the counselors are tracking that and working with students to make sure that they have opportunities if they are shy in their credit load to be able to pick up those credits that they need to graduate with the increased level of credits needed for 2015.
That's like a mouthful.
Yeah, and I'm talking pretty fast. And there's one other plug I'd like to just throw out there so people can get it on their calendar, and that's College Fair. So College Fair is being hosted this year at Juneau Douglas High School on October 16th. So put that on your calendar. The students from Thunder Mountain will be bused in to JDHS to be able to attend, and the JDHS students will be there during the day. But there'll be a forum in the afternoon from 5 to 6 o'clock for parents to come and meet with college reps. And we usually have anywhere from 60 to 70 college reps from around the U.S. come and attend. And it's a great opportunity for folks to talk to the college admission representatives and learn a little bit more about the schools without having to travel out to all those schools.
Can you repeat that information again? Not all of it, but just the part that talks about what time the meetings are.
You bet. So Juneau Douglas High School Senior Night is tonight at 5 o'clock in the Commons. The Thunder Mountain Senior Night is Thursday night, the 18th, at 5:30 in their auditorium. Junior night for both schools will be on the 23rd. Juneau Douglas will be in their library at 5 o'clock. Thunder Mountain will be at 5:30 in their auditorium, and then financial aid night will be September 30th at 5:30 in Thunder Mountain Auditorium.
Is this information available online?
This information is online. If you go to the Career Center websites online, it is online. I have as well sent some information out to parents directly and made some phone calls to folks. So hopefully the information is out and available.
All right, Terry Kelman, thank you so much for coming down to the station. Is there anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
No, I think we're doing pretty good. I'm going to run off and get set up for senior night for tonight at Juneau Douglas.
Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you so much, Jeff.
This is Bird Note. Today, we're walking the shoreline of a saltwater bay. The tide's going out, revealing a broad expanse of dark, glistening mudflat. This muddy plain might appear a waste of natural space, a mere transient landscape awaiting the rising tide. and that low tide smell. On a hot day, it goes right by pungent, heading for malodorous. But that mudflat fragrance offers an important clue. Mudflats are rich in nutrients, such as decomposing organic matter and minerals. Mudflats, far from wastelands, support a bounty of life, such as foraging sandpipers called dunlins. Much of this life lies below the surface. Scoop up a pail of mud, and you might find, in addition to a clam or two big enough to eat, vast quantities of tiny snails and clams, worms, crustaceans, larvae, and much more. Mudflats also support a bounty of bird life. Millions of shorebirds follow shorelines and their mudflats each spring and fall, where they feast upon those tiny creatures hidden beneath the mud surface, a banquet that powers the birds' continent-spanning migrations. So the next time you wrinkle your nose at low tide, imagine the countless creatures that draw their lifeblood from that fragrant mudflat. Today's show brought to you by the Bobolink Foundation. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
I'm 356 and you tune to KTOO News in Juneau. Tomorrow, 3 on a Juneau afternoon, John Partis will be your host. We'll get the details about Saturday's Superior Home Companion Viewing Party. We'll talk with organizers of this weekend's Discover Eagle Crest event. Where's Richard Radford will buy Light Compass, Male Youth Mentoring Program. And we'll get a preview of the upcoming Juneau Jazz and Classics, Juneau Arts and Humanities Council Concert Series. At Raiders Almanac, Bird Note, Music and More tomorrow, 3 on a Juneau afternoon. Well, the forecast for tonight, mostly cloudy skies with a slight chance of rain early in the evening. Areas of fog later on with low temperatures around 47 degrees. Wednesday, mostly cloudy skies with areas of fog in the morning, high temperatures around 57 degrees. Thursday, rain, high temperatures around 54 degrees. Friday, more rain with high temperatures around 55 degrees. Thanks for tuning in to Juneau Afternoon. Coming up next, All Things Considered.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We rebroadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, and K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable, on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
the air we breathe, the water we drink, the climate that makes it possible for humans to thrive. These are things that are under stress in our changing world. So what's a person to do? Well, you can tune in to Living on Earth. Hi, I'm Steve Kerwood, and every week we keep you informed of the choices you can make to make a better life for you, your family, and your community. That's Living on Earth from PRI.
Sundays at 2 on KTOO News.
This will not be an easy